Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, A World Dialogue by Erwin Gonschak, is one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationship between man and man.
United Nations DC-6B calling Indola Airport, requesting permission to land.
It was the dark of night, September 17th, 1961. A plane circled low over the continent of Africa. I saw its lights flash wanly and pitifully over the land.
Indola Airport calling plane approaching field. Can see your lights faintly. Please identify yourself. Please identify yourself and stand by for instructions. Indola Airport.
The 20th century is my century. I'm part of it. The evil and the good. The despair and the hope. I heard this plane circling the continent. I heard the call it was making. I listened to the airport calling. I could hear both voices. First the plane and then the airport. But it was clear to me that neither heard the other. Two voices speaking, but contact was not being made.
This is United Nations Radio. On September 12th, Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld flew to Leopoldville, capital of the Congo, for discussions with the central government on UN aid to that deeply troubled country. Today, it was learned that Mr. Hammarskjöld is flying to Ndola in northern Rhodesia for talks with President Tshombe of Katanga province. A small-scale war has broken out between UN forces and Katangan forces. The mission to Indola is one of several efforts on the part of the Secretary General to achieve a ceasefire in the fighting.
How's it look, pilot?
Not too good, Mr. Hammarskjöld. Can't seem to make contact with Indola. Wouldn't like to have any trouble in this terrain.
Any sign of that Katangan jet?
No, sir.
Well, that's one fellow we're not anxious to meet.
Yes, sir.
He seems to take a special delight in shooting up United Nations installations.
I know, sir. We ran into him in Elizabethville.
How much longer can we remain in the air?
4 or 5 hours, sir. 6 at the most.
We'll chance it for a while, then.
No.
Quite a lot is at stake, Captain. The way things are going, this old world of ours just can't allow a brush fire to get out of hand.
At Indola Airport, a representative of President Tshombe was talking with members of the press. I listened.
Yes, that is right. The Secretary General is expected to land shortly.
Sir, exactly what is the purpose of this meeting?
Well, let me read you what Hammarskjöld has written to President Tshombe. Quote, I suggest that I should meet you personally so that we can together try to find peaceful methods of resolving the present conflict, thus opening the way to a solution of the Katanga problem within the framework of the Congo, unquote.
Is President Tshombe hopeful?
Yes, yes. He believes the difficulties can be settled because he finds that Mr. Hammarskjöld is a man he can talk to freely.
Sir.
Yes?
A report has just reached us that Mr. Hammarskjöld's plane has crashed. The Secretary General is dead.
The plane had cut a swath of 200 yards through the thick African forest before it crashed to the ground and burned. With bowed head, I walked quietly through the wreckage. Certain words were remembered. Dag Hammarskjöld had spoken them on July 20th last, before the Security Council, about the Congo.
I can report that the UN has embarked on its single biggest effort under UN colors organized and directed by the UN itself. I'm going to have to ask member states for much, much more. But there should be no hesitation, because we are at a turn of the road where our attitudes will be of decisive significance, I believe, not only for the future of the organization, but also for the future of Africa. And Africa, gentlemen, may well, in present circumstances, mean the world.
Heed well this admonition. I, who have seen the horrors of this age, invite you, men of Europe and Africa, Asia and the Americas, to join me here, to walk with me here among the ruins of a down plain, to see what understanding we can gain. I implore you, men of all faiths and creeds, take notice of what has happened here. Sift through the ashes of this disaster. There must be meaning here.
That's quite an impact and explosion. Not much left here.
Well, we'll take whatever materials we can find back to headquarters for the investigation. Now, what's this?
Huh? Oh, the charred remains of a book.
You think it belonged to Hammerschild?
Can't tell. I can just about make out the title. That's peculiar.
Yes? What is it?
I and thou.
Just that?
Yeah.
Now, whatever does that mean?
The book is important. We must learn more about it. Come back with me into time. September 12th last. At Idlewild Airport in New York, a reporter speaks to Mr. Hammerschild before he boards a plane for the Congo.
I wonder, Mr. Secretary General, how the translation of Professor Buber's work, I and Thou, is coming.
Slowly. A few other things have been on my mind.
But are you taking it to the Congo?
Oh, yes. There may be some lulls. Often are.
I wish you luck. On both, I mean. The Congo and the translation.
Thank you. I'm hopeful. That's a professional weakness. Hopeful and insistent. You know, there's a relationship between Buber's philosophy and the Congo.
Yes? In what respect, sir?
The way the Congo's problem will be solved will not be by the use of force and intimidation, but by the normal and diplomatic means of persuasion and advice. That is a basic theme which runs through Buber's work.
At its death, Mr. Hammerschild was translating the work of the Israeli philosopher. There are many links between this book and Hammerschild's basic beliefs and his fatal flight into deepest Africa. What were the words that Hammerschild read as he began the translation?
To man, the world is twofold, in accordance with his twofold attitude. The attitude of man is twofold, in accordance with the twofold nature of the primary words which he speaks. The primary words are not isolated words, but combined words. The one primary word is the combination I, thou. I and thou, in which the I strives always to respond to the other person as a very special person, not a he or a she, but a thou.
Are you puzzled? Soon a short sentence appears in the writing. Perhaps Mr. Hammerschild was preparing to translate it, but with this sentence, I believe, the text becomes clearer.
All real living is meeting.
Well, welcome back, Mr. Secretary General, from your recent trip to the Middle East.
Before I begin, may I add one point on an out-of-the-way trip I made with a strong personal meaning, and that was that I had the pleasure of paying a call on Professor Martin Buber in Jerusalem, for whom I have a sincere admiration. One day I intend to translate into Swedish some of Buber's essays from his book, Pointing the Way, in which he discussed genuine dialogue and the possibilities of peace.
Would you please explain that a little further, Mr. Secretary General?
Yes. Professor Buber's essay deals with the need to set up a dialogue between statesmen and nations that will not be inspired by the will to unmask or score debating points, but by the will to understand and be understood.
Far from this fire-blackened patch of African forest to the northeast, lives in Jerusalem the revered sage, Martin Buber. What are the roots of his philosophy which influenced Hammershaw so greatly? Near the beginning of the century, Buber had lived in Zehlendorf, Germany. Buber had been greatly attracted by the Hasidic rabbis of the East. Still, he began to wonder if he was merely pursuing religious pedantry rather than seeking the truly religious life. And then one day, after a deep trance-like absorption in his religious studies, Professor Buber was visited by a young man.
Professor Buber?
Yes, yes.
Am I disturbing you?
No, no, young man. Sit down. What can I do for you?
An ordinary meeting between two men. At least so it appeared. The meeting had a profound effect on the scholar. And this is what Buber has written.
On this morning, I had a visit from an unknown man, without my being there in spirit. Yes, I conversed attentively and openly with him. Only I omitted to guess the questions which he never put. Later, not long after, I learned from one of his friends the essential content of these questions, but only after the young man was no longer alive. He had died on the battlefield. I learned that he had come to me not casually, but born by destiny, not for a chat, but for a decision. He had come to me. He had come in this hour. What do we expect when we are in despair and yet go to a man? A turning to the other? Surely a presence by means of which we are told that nevertheless there is meaning.
This is United Nations Radio. Today, the Secretary General said he was personally prepared to fly to war-torn Hungary to implement resolutions passed by the General Assembly. This is United Nations Radio. Today, the Secretary General spoke with Premier Khrushchev in the Black Sea Resort area.
A pattern of beliefs and deeds emerge. The links between Dag Hammarskjöld and Martin Buber become apparent. Recently, the philosopher at 82 journeyed to the Mediterranean Colloquium in Florence. He was interviewed afterwards.
What was your reason for going, Professor Buber?
One reason was to make contact with people from the Arab world. I have always firmly believed in the necessity of Arab-Israeli friendship.
Were you able to meet any Arab representatives?
Yes, yes, the Egyptian delegate. And it was a real talk in which we tried to pierce the hard core of the political sphere.
After all these years of conflict, is this possible, Professor?
Yes. I say it is still. It is always possible to do so. In human terms.
A pattern emerges. An idea takes shape. Listen. Men of the world, come stand with me here among the ruins of a plain in Africa. Let us continue our search into the meaning of events and the lives of great men.
Please, Mr. Hammarskjöld, sit down. It's a pleasure to welcome you to my home in Jerusalem.
And it is a pleasure, Professor Buber, to have the opportunity to see you again after our previous meeting in New York.
I hope you have...
Twice, these two men met. The Israeli philosopher and the world diplomat. Each admired the other greatly. In their letters, they had discussed the medieval mystics and the power of love. What was discussed at their last meeting, I do not know, but perhaps each told a favorite story, which was characteristic of the man and his beliefs.
There is a tale that a man inspired by God once went out from his creaturely realms till he came to the gates of mystery. He knocked. From within came the cry, "What do you want here?" He said, "I have proclaimed your praise in the ears of mortals, but they were deaf to me. So I came to you, that you yourself may hear me and reply." "Turn back," came the cry from within. "Here is no ear for you. I have sunk my hearing in the deafness of mortals." I believe, Mr. Hammershaw, that the word of him who wishes to speak with man without speaking with God is not fulfilled. And the word of him who wishes to speak with God without speaking with man goes astray.
And in like manner, perhaps Dag Hammarskjöld told a story which meant much to him and revealed much of the man.
I am reminded by this trip to the Middle East of what early Chinese historians had to say about the philosopher Sun Tzu and his followers 2,300 years ago. Constantly rebuffed, but never discouraged, Sun Tzu and his disciples went round from state to state, helping people to settle their differences, arguing against wanton attack and pleading for the suppression of arms, that the age in which they lived might be saved from its state of continual war. Nowhere meeting with any great success, they obstinately persisted in their tasks till kings and commoners alike grew weary of listening to them. Yet, undeterred, they continued to force themselves on people's attention. To one who works in the UN, it strikes a familiar note. But, Professor Buber, look anywhere in the world today. Is there any solution in sight except through peacefully negotiated agreements?
Some months later, Professor Buber made a comment on his meeting with Dag Hammarskjöld.
"Here in Hammarskjöld, I saw a man of goodwill who tried to do something, but he was abandoned. Doing his utmost, Hammarskjöld still lacked the technical means to carry out his peace mission. And so he was martyred in his death."
"The Nobel Committee of the Norwegian Storting has the honor to confer posthumously the Peace Prize for 1961 to Dag Hammarskjöld, late Secretary General of the United Nations, in recognition of his attempts to bring peace to the Congo."
There is one more link to be forged, one more encounter to be described. Oslo, Norway, December 11th, 1961. The chair for the Secretary General is empty. But in the next chair sits a man from Africa.
"We also announce that the Nobel Peace Prize for 1960 goes to Albert John Luthuli of South Africa for his work for human rights and brotherhood among races through peaceful means."
Albert John Luthuli and Dag Hammarskjöld were not to meet, but it is fitting that the African receives the Peace Prize at the same time as the late Secretary General. For Luthuli, too, has cried out aloud for the need of dialogue between men. Arrested, persecuted, insulted, beaten in his homeland of South Africa, still he persists.
"Who will deny that 30 years of my life have been spent knocking in vain, patiently, moderately, and modestly, at a closed and barred door? But how can there be peace in our land unless we talk, one people to another, one man to another?"
Indeed, the African chief's presence at the ceremonies affirms Hammarskjöld's belief of maintaining the bonds between men, what Buber has called I and thou. And when Luthuli receives his prize, he too speaks of Mr. Hammarskjöld.
"I find it significant that Dag Hammarskjöld's life was lost in Africa. Nobody knows how many times he saved the world from war. Let this peace prize and his death be a challenge to all leaders in the world to obliterate those conditions which he died fighting.
Return with me now to the ashes of the plane which carried the Secretary General to his death.
All set?
Yes, I think that does it. The last of the plane fragments for the inquest is on the helicopter.
Nothing left now but the scars and the forest.
And they won't last long either.
Sure. In this part of Africa, the forest moves right in. Come back in a few months, you wouldn't know anything happened.
All right. Let's get out of here.
Stay your flight from disaster. This is the century of man's choice. To enhance life or destroy it. I call to Africa and Europe, Asia and the Americas to join me here. Listen to the words of three different men with a common humanity. The Israeli philosopher.
Peoples must engage in talk with one another through their truly human men. If the great peace is to appear, and the devastated life of the earth renew itself.
The African chieftain.
Africa's friendship scornfully rejected, her pleas for justice and fair play spurned. Should she not nonetheless seek to turn enmity into amity, acting in concert with other nations? Africa is man's last hope for a mediator between East and West, and is qualified to demand of the great powers to turn the swords into plowshares, because two-thirds of mankind is hungry and illiterate.
The world diplomat.
Mankind's need is to establish full human contact and communications across geographical and political boundaries. This is an indispensable condition if humanity is to move toward true world community.
United Nations DC-6B calling Indola Airport, requesting permission to land.
Indola Airport calling plane approaching field. Can see your lights faintly. Please identify yourself. Please identify yourself as
the United Nations plane circled Africa. Contact between it and the field was not made, and the plane crashed to the ground, and the lives of many men of peace were lost. I call you, my brothers in all lands, come, join hands together. Walk with bowed heads through these scarred ruins in Africa. We must all meet here in dedication, I and thou, and take into our heart and soul the mission of Dag Hammarskjöld.
Ours is a work of reconciliation and realistic construction. The greatest prayer of man is not for victory, but for peace.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Andrew Cordier, who was Executive Assistant to the Secretary General of the United Nations for 16 years and is now Chairman of the newly formed United States Committee of the Dag Hammarskjöld Foundation. Mr. Cordier has recently been appointed Dean of the Graduate School of International Affairs at Columbia University. Mr. Cordier.
This program, which is dedicated to the late Dag Hammarskjöld, brings to our minds most keenly again aspects of his extraordinary career and also of the tragedy of his passing. In the period of his Secretary Generalship, I had the privilege of being his closest associate and therefore had the really precious opportunity of observing the depth and the breadth of his interests, the scope of his profound thinking in so many fields of activity. It was not only diplomacy and not only economics, it was not only administration of the United Nations, but he was a master in architecture, in art, in music, in literature, in drama, in religion, and philosophy. And therefore, we have lost, the world has lost, all of humanity has lost, a very, very great soul, a very dedicated leader indeed. He was actor and interpreter, an actor of tremendous force, of tremendous vitality, who gave wide scope to the post of the Secretary Generalship, an interpreter of the meaning of the Charter, of its great potentialities, a man who defined with great keenness and realism the scope of the processes of mediation, conciliation, and peaceful settlement, as no one has done in the period since the United Nations has started. Well, since Dag Hammarskjöld died on that fateful day of September 17th on a mission of peace in the Congo, the whole world has mourned his passing, and there have been many, many expressions of interest in testimonials to his memory. From all sides, from all parts of the world, there's been this tremendous outpouring of sympathy and of concern and of interest in the development of memorials to him. And we in this country have just organized the United States Committee of the Dag Hammarskjöld Foundation as our means of channeling effectively the concerns of so many people across the country who have expressed a desire to participate directly in a living memorial to this extraordinary human being. I think that the efforts that are made by the peoples around the world to carry on his work, whether through the United Nations or through activities outside of the United Nations, are in fact representations of our concern for the great work, the great sense of dedication, which is always reflected during the lifetime of Dag Hammarskjöld. His interest was reflected, for example, also in his very close connection with Martin Buber, his admiration for his great work. And again, Dag Hammarskjöld would come to my office to talk over sections, chapters, sentences from Martin Buber's books. His Pointing the Way, for example, or again, I and Thou, a book, a section of which he was translating on the fateful trip which led to his death. There was a common bond between Martin Buber and Dag Hammarskjöld, which is in fact a great compliment to both.
Thank you, Mr. Cordier. Eternal Light Drama Today, A World Dialogue, written by Erwin Gonchak, was one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationships between man and man. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Theo Goetz, Elwood Smith, Albert M. Ottenheimer, William Mason, Larry Robinson, Martin Rudy, William Redfield, Ivor Francis, and Howard Petrie. Norman Rose was the narrator. This is Vic Robey. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.